The Trump administration announced its vision for a revamped U.S. tax code today. Here's Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin outlining the plan earlier this afternoon.
The economic plan under Trump will grow the economy and will create massive amounts of revenues, trillions of dollars in additional revenues.
Well, it could also create trillions of dollars to the deficit. The plan calls for reducing the number of individual income tax brackets down to three, slashing the corporate tax rate to 15%, eliminating the estate tax and others. But it also calls for doubling the standard deduction, which would essentially eliminate taxes on the first $24,000 a couple earns. Now, you've probably heard of that quotation oft attributed to the great Supreme Court Justice Oliver Wendell Holmes. Taxes are what we pay for a civilized society. So what version of a civilized society do we see in this Trump tax plan? Joining us now with his thoughts is Richard Parker. He is an economist at the Harvard Kennedy School of Government. He's also former president of the liberal group Americans for Democratic Action. Richard Parker, welcome to Radio Boston.
Nice to be with you.
So can you give us your first reactions to these broad outlines that the Trump administration has provided today? It's just a one-page glimpse into their tax plan, but your first thoughts.
Sure. It's surprisingly like Republican orthodox tax policy since the Reagan administration. This is basically the third iteration of one form or another of what's called supply-side economics. The central argument is that we're overtaxed, corporations are overtaxed, the wealthy are overtaxed, but so are the rest of us. And if taxes are dramatically reduced, it will set off an explosion of growth and investment that will flow back not just to the corporations and wealthy, but to the rest of us. That's the argument. It was tried in the 1980s, and it was tried again in the aughts by George W. Bush. And now we're in 2017 about to go through to home plate for a third round of pitching this story.
So, I mean, in your view, is that the kind of tax plan that best supports the civilized society that we envision for America?
Well, I'll try to maintain a neutral scholar's hat for a moment. A couple of things, one of which is, does this kind of tax policy, in fact, grow the economy dramatically better than other tax policies? We have a lot of data on that, and the answer is, I think, pretty conclusively no. In fact, the United States had much better growth rates in the 50s and 60s when the top marginal rates on individuals were over 90%. And corporations paid as much as 2 to 3 times as much in taxes as they do today. Now, that may sound counterintuitive, but it is also about how hard you want to work for what you get. I suppose, you know, for those hedge fund managers who made $1 or 2 or 3 billion last year, the question is, would they work hard if they were only getting $500 million? My suspicion is almost all of them are type A personalities who would love to make the $500 million in some ways as much as they're delighted to make the $1 or $2
billion. I think Warren Buffett himself, I mean, he's obviously famously for a very aggressive estate tax, but he said that he's never made a business decision, nor anyone that he knows, that has been swayed by the intricacies of the U.S. tax code.
Right. I mean, some corporations have, and, you know, there's an industry of consultants, accountants, and lawyers who do nothing but direct or channel investment decisions based on exactly that. We got that in the 1980s when, in fact, we wildly overbuilt the commercial real estate market in the United States. And if you've been reading in recent weeks, we've got a tremendous problem in commercial real estate. And it's a legacy of enormous, enormous overbuilding of commercial real estate because of the restructuring of American taxes and the write-offs of investment in commercial real estate. We basically doubled the total square footage of commercial real estate in the United States in a little more than a decade.
So to focus a little bit more on the centerpiece of this tax plan, again, the Trump administration basically put out a page or so many, many details yet to be filled in. But reducing the corporate tax rate to 15%, I mean, down from its statutory rate of 35%, and I use I say that specifically because in reality, the effective rate is not 35% in the United States for all the reasons why you just mentioned. But there continues to be this notion that it would spur business, it would spur growth. I mean, Treasury Secretary Mnuchin today just said he thinks that this one thing could spur trillions of dollars of growth to the U.S. economy. And you say,
well,
you
I mean, I want to be patient and I want to be complimentary of Secretary Mnuchin. And I believe that he's owed a hearing like the president on this. But they're going to have to produce some data that would conclusively show that that's true. And as I said, we have prior examples of exactly this kind of tax policy. And any reputable economist or tax specialist can sit down with the press, sit down with the Congress and tell them, comparatively, what was achieved by doing this particular kind of massive supply-side tax cutting. As I said just a moment ago, it doesn't produce the growth that has been promised. The more important thing for many Americans today is that it's directly associated with a constantly growing income inequality.
Right.
Before supply-side economics started, the top 1% had about 8% of the total income of all households. It's now got somewhere between a quarter and 22-24%, basically almost has tripled its share of total income in the United States. So there's a distributional problem if you consider inequality upwards a problem. And of course, that's probably not as neutral as I should be because I'm more concerned about it than downward shifts of. The other is that it constantly adds to the debt.
Right. Yeah.
No Republican has been able to manage a balanced budget for one single year since 1958. The last president in the Republican Party to balance a federal budget was Dwight David Eisenhower. Hmm. And I think that all of us ought to pause when you think that the federal debt is right now nudging up on $20 trillion. And we're passing on to a generation who didn't ask for it a burden of repayment that is going to make the idea that we need these kinds of stimulus in order to provoke a few within the society to do well for us all.
Well,
to lead to revolt. I mean, I'm just terribly concerned about the misdirection of the fundamental arguments in this policy.
So just I'm seeing here that the Tax Policy Center says that this latest tax plan from President Trump or the Trump administration would cost $4 trillion over the next 10 years. So potentially adding that much to
I've seen those numbers. It could go higher depending on whether or not a couple of additional things are pushed through. $4 trillion is the low ball number.
Right. So let me ask you, I think it's fairly clear to listeners where your sympathies lie. But I want to...
With a fair and honest tax plan.
Yeah. But I'm wondering, why is it regarding supply-side dogma, supply-side orthodoxy, why do you think that has held such powerful sway amongst members of the, members of the federal government for so long? I mean, especially given the evidence that you point to that shows that it may not spur economic growth as much as it's hoped to or claimed to.
Let's see. I would probably say honest but uninformed belief, greed, and stupidity. I think those are the three factors. I don't describe all three of them uniformly to all advocates, but I think that to some measure or another, those things can be distributed fairly well across the advocate platform that's been advanced. Again, I would be glad to stand up with Grover Norquist or Paul Ryan or Secretary Mnuchin and go over the data of the last 50 to 70 years of American tax policy history, American growth, American income distribution, and American indebtedness, and see what the majority of Americans believe at the end of that discussion.
Hmm. You know, the Trump plan, or the broadest outlines of it revealed today, on the one hand, seek to eliminate the estate tax altogether, mm-hmm. but on the other hand, mm-hmm. talk about eliminating all sorts of other deductions which may have been particularly beneficial to higher income workers. I mean, what do you think about that? About simplifying the tax code by eliminating those deductions, is that a possible way to begin to address the inequities that are in the tax code?
Don't think of it as the estate tax, or as the Republicans prefer, the death tax. They love that phrase, the death tax, that grew out of polling that they did in the 1990s as part of the Contract with America. Think of it instead as the Donald Trump's children's free money tax. Because in essence, you're saying to a country that believes that there is a reward to hard work, that there's an even greater reward to your choice of parents. And that seems to me to be a peculiar form of reasoning, and I do think that it's deeply detached from hard work, because I don't think any of us, as eggs or spermatozoa, actually made choices that we could call informed about who our parents would be.
Yeah. You know, on the other hand, though, at the very beginning of this conversation, I mentioned that the Trump plan does propose to double that standard deduction. Okay, so would that make a significant difference to people?
Of course it'll make a significant difference to some people, but nearly half of Americans don't pay income tax now. What you have to understand is that the sources of funding for the federal government have changed dramatically over the last 50 years. The segment of funding for the government that has grown most rapidly are payroll and associated payroll taxes. And those are profoundly regressive in the sense that they're uniform. And in the case of Social Security, they're a flat tax up to about $120,000, and then they drop to zero. Let me explain for your listeners what I mean, which is that if I'm earning $30,000 and the Social Security tax is, let's call it for simplicity's sake, 10%, I pay out $3,000.
Yeah.
If I pay $100,000, I pay $10,000. But after that, I still pay no more than $10,000.
Yeah.
So if I make a million, I'm still paying $10,000. If I make a million and I pay $10,000 and you make $30,000 and pay $3,000, which of us is paying higher taxes?
Right.
That's where the growth in taxes has come. The other place in which taxes have fallen are corporate taxes.
Right. And I'm sorry to have to cut you off there, Mr. Parker, but we're just out of time. Richard Parker, he's economist at the Harvard Kennedy School of Government. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, delight as always. Always love to talk taxes with you.
Hopefully we'll do it again soon. We'll be back. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.